Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:31 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 9th, and I'm recording a little earlier today because I'm heading off to the airport soon to go to the Future Minerals Forum in Saudi Arabia, and look forward there to meeting a significant number of gold mining CEOs and quizzing them about how their businesses are going, and most particularly about the cost of production with higher, I guess, higher compliance costs in terms of the global mining sector, then also energy costs and global governance. Well, then we can think about copper, and copper prices have broken up through the $4 area in here today. And you can see also that $4 was an area of support in 2021, and until just the end of the, or I guess the middle of the second quarter in 2022. So if it can sustain a move up through $4, that would be a resumption of the medium-term recovery. And it is a clear sign that China's attitude towards its economy has undergone a sea change. So this is a significant event. I continue to think of copper as about the best way to monitor the outlook for China and its economy, because domestic stock prices tend to be heavily influenced by government policy and aren't truly reflective of the economy, whereas copper is globally fungible and also then heavily reliant on China's infrastructure demand and internal processing. So this is a significant pop on the upside. What I found especially interesting is that on the same day that copper popped on the upside, nickel prices did not and have pulled back down again. So this is a rather meaningful reversal of an earlier advance in here today. And now prices are likely to come back down, at least test the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's not that all industrial resources are rising, but certainly those that are attuned to China's infrastructure development are attracting attention. And then the Chinese renminbi is also strengthening up here and has now pulled through the 200-day moving average. So this is a rather meaningful recovery here, and certainly now strengthening in a rather abrupt fashion. So that's further confirmation that China has changed their attitude towards supporting the economy. So then Chinese stocks and the H-share index in Hong Kong were in positive territory today, but it wasn't universal. So when we look then at the just global markets, the Hang Seng was up 1.89%, the CSI 300.8%, and we've got pretty strong performance just about everywhere. But then let's just look at the Nasdaq, because that was up 2% at one point today, and certainly following through on the upside that we saw on Friday. And some of the most oversold of the large tech companies are also rebounding. So Tesla, having got all the way down to test the $100 area, is steadier in here today and up over $9. And I think it's particularly relevant here that we have a very deep oversold condition, and that the price could almost double and still only be approximating the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So we're very oversold. There is clearly the potential for a reversionary rally in here. There's a lot of enthusiasm spreading about artificial intelligence and the best companies that would offer leverage to that. Now, this isn't the first time that there's been enthusiasm about artificial intelligence, but certainly the tools that are coming to the market are more impressive than we've seen in the past. Nvidia is attempting to put in a higher reaction low and bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And then we can think about Taiwan Semiconductor, and it's also bouncing. It hasn't quite yet pushed up through those MAs, but it does look like it's a higher reaction low. So then let's just go back and think about Nvidia. We had this huge decline in 2020, and that was very much in line with the rising interest rate environment, tighter global liquidity, and the decline of cloud computing stocks. And now the price has rebounded from the $100 area. So let's just discount all of the advance. And we can see that Nvidia did exceptionally well in from the period from 2015 through to 2018. A lot of that had to do with graphics chips and their greater use in at server farms and in mining Bitcoin. But then let's just go back and look at what it looked like before that. And we had just a very long period of nothing. And that doesn't mean that we didn't have big moves. There was a big move from 1 to 4.5, and that took place between 2008 and 2010. But by the time we got all the way up and successfully up through that $5 area, well, it took another 6 or 7 years. So then let's just think about where we are right now. We've had a very big pullback, and certainly there is evidence of support coming through, but that was an awfully big downward dynamic that we had 3 or 4 weeks ago. So when we think about what is the potential here, well, there's certainly scope for a rebound. And we can see that too with Tesla, that we've got oversold conditions and interest rates don't look likely that they're going to come down in a hurry, but bond yields are pricing that in. So from the perspective that everything is priced off the 10-year, the fact that we had a meaningful contraction in yields last week and follow through on the downside in here today, it's lending support to the assets that were most heavily influenced by the rising yield environment of 2022. And that's feeding through into the largest companies. And then we can think about the leaders in that sector, like Apple, where it is bouncing from the 1,000-day moving average, and for that matter, so is Microsoft. And both have put in a low above the low put in November, so it's a higher reaction low, at least so far. Google did not hold support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but it is holding its November low and steadying as well. Now, these are still medium-term downtrends. We still have sequences of lower rally highs. So at the very minimum, we're due at least a bounce in here. And there is certainly the scope for additional upside if bond yields continue lower. I think that it's particularly relevant. And I haven't seen a lot of commentary about it elsewhere, that quantitative tightening generally, and at least in the last 3 times we've seen it tested, which was twice in the USA and once in Europe, when central banks reduce the size of their balance sheets, it contributes to deflationary forces. And we've seen that, and I think it is just worth looking at the yield between 2018 and at 2019, because what we can see then was that yields went up first, down afterwards. So in 2018, yields went up first and then collapsed. And then during the pandemic, they really collapsed. Well, we've had almost the exact same thing happen here. Bond yields go up first, now they're starting to come back down. But every other time we've seen quantitative tightening attempted, we get this collapse in yields. So I think it is a better than even bet that yields are going to be somewhere around 2% at some point this year. And if yields come back like that, then some of the more speculative assets in the market are going to have a significant rebound. And that's why I reversed my short in the Nasdaq last week and went long. And I think that's probably a 6 to 10 week trade. So we'll see how it goes, but certainly yields continue to contract from here. Now, when we then think about the wider market, Well, with the renminbi strengthening up and the dollar starting to ebb, then this is downside follow-through for the dollar index, and it is now encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is meaningful, and it suggests that there is further room on the downside for the dollar, and that's positive for gold. So gold prices were in mildly positive territory in here today, and not quite able to hold all of the advance. So we do have a mild short-term overbought condition, but as long as yields are coming down, then that's likely to add a tailwind to gold. Of course, we also have declining global mining activity, or global mine production, I think, to be more accurate, and central banks are buying gold, but I think the way that it is priced is much more attached to what's happening in the bond markets right now. Now, silver was in mildly negative territory today as it pauses in the region of $25, and the platinum price, having popped straight up through the $1,000 level, has paused around the 1100 level and was in mildly negative territory in here today. But I think this is still a clear recovery environment. And I do think that by the time we get to the end, or I guess it's not even the end, but at some point we are going to see gold breaking up through to new all-time highs on a purchasing power parity basis. And this is a very long-term chart, but we can definitely see that in the 1970s, prices went up a lot during the inflationary surge, but and of course the decoupling of the dollar to gold. But that the on a purchasing power parity basis, gold didn't has not yet taken out that 1980 peak, which really helps to highlight just how much purchasing power the dollar has lost over the last 40 years. But the more important point here is that it is bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and this looks like a big, broad consolidation, which should eventually take gold up to a new purchasing power parity peak, which could easily take it up to 300. And I think that's really just a starting point for a new bull market. The US dollar has been exceptionally firm for over 18 months, and now I think there's a really big question, and it is just how powerful are the Freedom Caucus in the US government? Because it is worth reminding ourselves that back in 2011 and 12, the dollar started rising, and that was on the back of the evolution of the Tea Party movement, and their intention was to create a balanced budget amendment. Now, one of the primary reasons why the dollar is so weak is because of continued spending, and bond yields are contracting, but one of the primary arguments for why bond yields should rise is because of the massive amount of issuance that's coming down the pipe in 2023. So, then how well will budgets pass in the USA? That's the big question. Are we going to go into a tighter spending pattern for the USA? Now, of course, that could easily put some, or they could temper enthusiasm for a further rally in stocks, and it would certainly encourage people to buy bonds, and it would act as support for the dollar. Now, there is absolutely no proof of it yet, but we certainly saw last week that Kevin McCarthy had an awfully difficult time getting approved as Speaker of the House. So He has had to make some very large concessions. And there is then the question, how bipartisan will the next administration be? And how are they going to get decisions and budgets passed? And will spending continue to be as high as it has been? Those are the big questions for the dollar. And at the moment, at least, there's no evidence that it is arresting the decline in the dollar. So then we can think about governance and the very emotive pictures seen in Brazil over the weekend with the supporters of Bolsonaro storming the parliament building in Brasilia. And the Brazilian stock market has completely shaken it off. So there's no willingness to think that this is anything more than an expression of disquiet among a small number of people, and the Brazilian real continues to strengthen. So we're definitely seeing that even though standards of governance have deteriorated, investors are still willing to look past that at higher commodity prices, contributing to perhaps a more stable environment for some of these commodity exporters. And that's likely to be particularly relevant for countries like Australia and Canada. And the Australian dollar continues to push up through the 200-day moving average and is in the process of breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. Then the Canadian dollar should benefit from exports of all kinds of energy and agricultural commodities, and it is also strengthening in here. So holding the 140 level, and it's been holding that 140 level now for 8 years. So I think this is another meaningful change here. What it is also likely to do is to boost demand for value assets. And that's most particularly true for the UK, where the FTSE 100 is loaded with mining companies and resources companies and then dividend-paying companies in the healthcare sector. So it has now broken that sequence of lower rally highs. It's coming back up into the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and 18. But I think it's especially relevant to highlight that the FTSE 100 really hasn't gone much of anywhere since 2000. And it's been consolidating above the 7,000 level now for almost 5 years. And of course, we had the big surprise in 2020, and it subsequently rebounded and recouped most of that decline by the end of 2021. There's the potential here that we're going to see additional upside for the FTSE 100 and that it could clear the 8,000 level. And with the pound rebounding and establishing itself now above the 120 area and pushing up into the overhead trading range, this is meaningful. And it suggests that the weakness in the dollar is likely to be particularly beneficial to more value-oriented markets like the UK. And then if we look at the FTSE 250, well, it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but that does look like a likely potential outcome as the UK comes out of what's a very difficult environment at present with strikes and spending, which hasn't quite yet been cut, but certainly a lot more government budget discipline. And that's likely to eventually contribute to a significant recovery in the economy. But and the stock market, I think, is beginning to price that in. So Rolls-Royce has popped up through the 100p level again, and does look likely that it will unwind the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. And then let's think about BAE Systems. So that's a major defense contractor. And easing back here after pushing up to new all-time highs. But rearmament is likely to be a really significant trend over the course of the next decade. And I think when we look at artificial intelligence, that's something that's likely to be a trend in the technology sector. And it's a little woolly as to how it's going to develop and which are the companies that will benefit. Whereas the volume of munitions that are being expended in Ukraine relative to the ability of countries to replace them is pretty easy to understand. And it means that there's going to have to be additional spending. So, certainly, there is the scope here for an unwinding of the overbought condition, but that is likely to create a buying opportunity in the defense sector. And I suspect that defense is going to attract a lot more interest as we move further into this decade, and not least because there will be a significant need to rearm, regardless of just whether this war in Ukraine ends soon or long, or whether relations with China suddenly improve or don't, because having a big stick is certainly something that's going to be beneficial for lots of different countries. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.